Welcome to today's edition of the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show podcast.
Welcome to hour three of the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show. I am going to be talking to you with Clay here in a few moments about the Texas voting law. We've got updates for that. This hour, I should say. We'll be talking to you about that. Signed into law, Governor Abbott now has this voting law that is really, well, we'll break down the details of the voting law. SB1 ended up happening. But we've got updates on Afghanistan, too. How are we getting people out? Who's getting out? Is the Biden administration standing in the way? But first, as promised, we have here in studio our friend Zuby, who is a podcaster, rapper, author, public intellectual, and general life and fitness guru. Zuby, welcome, man. I know you've been making making the rounds across the states. How's it going?
I'm doing great, man. Happy to be here.
So you are from the UK originally, spent a lot of time there. You've been a critic of lockdownerism, or we call it Fauciism here. Fauci doesn't matter as much to you guys as, you know, across the ocean as it does to us here, unfortunately for us. But how's the U.S. doing compared to what you've seen in Europe when it comes to the lockdown madness?
Yeah, it's interesting. I've been opposed to all of this since day one, March 2020. I think it's, man, with a lot of things, it's kind of difficult to compare the U.K. with the USA because this place is so much bigger. The USA is like a continent. So as I've seen already from my travels here in the U.S. and from what I was seeing from afar, depending on what state and even what city you're in within a state, you can see a big range of different responses, from outdoor mask mandates and lockdowns in certain places to it basically seeming like COVID doesn't even exist in other places. 100% normal, people living normally, no restrictions, no mandates, everybody's going around their business as usual and not dropping down dead. So it's kind of weird. I mean, in the UK, I left about 6 weeks ago now, so before I left, there were still some restrictions in place, and as it stands, I believe everything has been dropped now, but they're still threatening to bring in the so-called vaccine passports. They're threatening to potentially go into another lockdown in a couple of months. So I think the UK is in a little bit of a precarious position, just like I think some of the blue states and cities in particular here are as well.
Zuby, I appreciate you joining us. The first time I became aware of you was when you did, because you're a comedian as well, some hysterical videos breaking all of the women's lifting records. You're a pretty strong dude, and I'm a sports guy originally. So this idea that men and women should be competing against each other, or that a transgender athlete should be competing against each other. You know, we just had the Olympics where we had a male who decided to become a woman competing to try to win weightlifting championships. There's a pretty significant biological difference between the two. I think that every state champion, for instance, in Texas over the last 20 years for high school is faster than the male, is faster than the fastest woman of all time. When did you come up with the idea to do these weightlifting challenges? And what were the responses to you becoming the strongest woman in the history of the world?
Well, it's an issue that I'd been observing for a couple of years, and I was telling people that this was going to happen. It was the inevitable logical conclusion of the ideology that was being pushed, right? Saying that anybody can be whatever gender they identify at any given moment. You don't even need to be consistent because you can be gender fluid as well. So actually, when I posted that just that morning, I'd seen a few stories coming out of the USA, in fact, which were about biological males dominating women in their sports. So out of curiosity, I just thought, man, I've got a really strong deadlift. I wonder what the British women's deadlift record is in my weight class. So I looked it up and I saw that it was about 50 or 60 kilograms below my maximum. And I was just like, oh, hey, I had that video on my phone. I posted that 9-second video thinking, okay, if I find this funny, a few other people will find it funny. And lo and behold, it was seen by millions upon millions of people, put me on tons of people's radar, and it was really the catalyst for a lot of people to discover all of the other things that I do. In terms of pushback, it was, you know, maybe like 0.5%, maybe for every 200 messages of support I got one attempting to criticize me, but really it was a checkmate position, because if someone believes in this ideology, they either need to accept me as the British women's deadlift record holder, or they have to say that I'm not actually a woman, which according to their own logic is transphobic. So they need to pick one.
Yeah, and explain why, right? One of the big questions that comes up, and I know this is now, it's really in the West in general. It's in the U.S., Canada, and Western Europe, too.
What is a woman is something that conservatives like to ask the question of, mm-hmm. because they won't give you a clear answer on it. And that affects things like the sports competitions that we're talking about here.
Yeah. I mean, a woman is an adult human female. We've known this for a very long period of time.
This audience knows this.
I think everybody knows it. I don't believe that anybody truly, truly in their heart, deep down, believes in the nonsense that they're saying with this. I don't believe anybody believes it.
It sounds like you also, though, experience that there's a very small but incredibly loud, influential, and vicious minority of opinion makers, really opinion police, mm-hmm. about issues like this that will come after you. And on the transgender rights issue, a lot of conservatives I know have said they've experienced more hatred, perhaps, for standing against that madness, mm-hmm. When it comes to things like the sports competitions than anything else.
Yep. Same goes for women as well. You know, there's a lot of groups of even feminists are very split on this issue.
Yeah, Zuby, I'm curious here. We get this question a lot, and I wonder what you would say. How do you win these debates, right? I mean, how do we get to the point where the idea of men competing against women, I think for almost anyone out there, is fundamentally ludicrous. That goes to the direct heart of sports. It's why we've separated men and women's sports forever, because as you demonstrated in becoming, congratulations, the strongest women's deadlifter in the history of Britain.
Thank you.
If men are competing against women, then women never win, and effectively women's athletics cease to exist. That's mm-hmm. the logical extension of where this leads. How do we end up winning this debate?
Well, you can't get someone out of a position using logic if they reach that position without logic.
Right? Yeah.
If someone's coming to a conclusion purely based off of emotion or raw ideology, then trying to logic your way out of it directly won't help. It'll just fall on deaf ears. I actually think the right way to do it is to do an extension of what I did and take the notion and run with it. Right? Run with it. Get a whole bunch of male athletes to claim that they are women in all sorts of sports and start infiltrating the women's leagues. And this thing will end within a week.
Zuby, just for everyone listening, we're joined by Zuby, who is a podcaster, author, global champion female deadlifter by his own admission, slash also a guy who has a lot of thoughts on COVID and a range of issues right now. Just what's it like, I mean, for a guy who is Black and British and stepping onto the public stage on some of these very contentious issues and is being embraced by conservatives in America. How does that feel? Are you surprised by it at all?
Not really. I mean, it's great. I've been to seven cities over the past 5 or 6 weeks, from Istanbul to New York to Dallas, Texas, and I've been stopped in the street in every single city, even on my way here to the station, by people telling me that they appreciate what I do and that they're happy to know that there's other sane people out there, people willing to speak the truth, people willing to have these conversations and to jump on some of these landmines. And I don't think it's necessarily about being conservative. I think it's about being sane at this stage.
Zuby, I think what's fascinating is in America, and I know this has spread to Europe as well, but identity politics are the foundation now of the Democratic Party. And also, I would say identity politics twinned with cancel culture. As a comedian, and a lot of what you do is cut through the illogical nature of many of the arguments out there using humor. To me, comedians need to be a massive part of punching back against identity politics and cancel culture. And they can do it in a way that illuminates, which is rare, I think, for the conservative space, the absurdity of left-wing politics. And we're seeing it from guys like Bill Maher, for instance, who now are recognizing that the humor here of Democratic positions lends them very much to satire. And obviously, with your weightlifting challenge, that's a big part of it. But it's a big part of intellectual freedom in general. Comedians can't make jokes unless they have a wide expanse of range. When you talk with other comedians, how much of a topic is cancel culture and the identity politics universe and what can and can't be said?
Well, I'm not a comedian. I'm just a guy who, I'm an artist. I do know some comedians. When I've had those conversations with a handful of comedians that I do know, though, I mean, they do a lot of self-policing just like everybody else does. The majority of the censorship that's going on right now in the Western world is self-inflicted. If you're in a country like the UK or Canada, then yes, there are governmental infringements on freedom of speech. And I know people who have been investigated and even prosecuted for things that they've posted online on Twitter or on YouTube. But primarily what it is just every American, every British person, every Canadian, the vast majority of people choosing to massively over self-censor themselves and self-police themselves just from basic opinions like, hey, I voted for Brexit. I voted for Trump. You know, this is my position on this. That's my position on that. I think there's a pandemic of cowardice that's going on. And I think that if everybody could simply be 10 to 20% more bold and a little bit more courageous, especially when you're dealing with stuff that's absurd, then I think we'd get through a lot of this.
Zuby, where can people go to appreciate your work, including a rapper and podcaster, right? So is it all in one place, or where should folks go if they want to hear what you're up to?
Sure. If you want to go to one single place where you'll find links to everything, you can go to zubymusic.com. That's Z-U-B-Y music. And you can also follow me on all social media at Zuby Music.
Well, by the way, next time I go to Nashville, if you're still bumping around the states, you got to come out there and see what it's like in the wonderful state of Tennessee where Mr. Travis is right now, because New York City's better than it was, but we've still got a ways to go here. Zuby, thank you so much for being in studio. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it.
You know, Clay, I had a pretty good night's sleep last night, and every time I wake up in the morning and I look over and I see my pillow, I'm reminded of the fact that I owe Mike Lindell a debt of gratitude, man. I'm doing better on this show because I am more refreshed and my neck feels better and I got more energy because of the My Pillows that are currently on my bed. Plus all the products they've got. They got the towel sets, the slippers, the robes, the mattress toppers. The Giza Dream Sheets are the best sheets I've ever owned. Trust Mike Lindell to give you a great night's sleep and to bring all these incredible products into your home like Clay and I have. We've both got them all over the place now.
No doubt, Buck. And to your point, I'm going to be on the road all fall. I'm going to be in Fayetteville, Arkansas this coming Thursday. I was in Charlotte. I was in Knoxville. We got a college football tour going on. Staying in a lot of hotels. And you know what? The sheets on the hotel beds are not as nice as the sheets that I have in my house. That's because they don't have Giza Dream Sheets and I do. Right now, they're 50% off with the promo code Clay and Buck. We have them throughout the entirety of the house. My bed, kids' beds, all throughout the house, guest bedroom. All my pillow products come with a 60-day money-back guarantee, and you can go to MyPillow.com, click on the radio listener specials to get the Giza Dream Sheets as low as $49.99 with the code CLAYANDBUCK or call 800-792-3269. You can get incredible discounts on all other MyPillow products, too, while visiting their website. Use the code CLAYANDBUCK, $49.99 Dream Sheets. You'll be glad that you did it. Do it today. Welcome back in, Clay Travis, Buck Sexton Show. Appreciate all of you spending your time with us. Thanks to Zuby. Encourage you to check out his work. You can download the podcast. Make sure you don't miss a single minute. You'll be glad that you did that. Search out my name, Clay Travis, Buck Sexton. Also, we're, for right now anyway, on virtually every social media platform. You can find us there. Follow us along, whether it's Instagram, whether it's Twitter, whether it's Facebook. We are there for you until those big tech companies decide to ban us. Speaking of the banning that is going on, do you remember when all of the members of the Texas State House were heroes and how everybody was saying, oh man, look at the stand that they're taking. They're on the Capitol steps. They're doing such an incredible job fighting back in favor of voting rights. And this is going to be a tremendous accomplishment. And they all were hanging out in their hotel rooms and they were getting on MSNBC and CNN. And then the story just kind of started to fade because people didn't really care that much. And the governor of Texas, Greg Abbott, said, hey, you know what? I'm just going to keep calling special sessions. And eventually they're going to have to come back to the state. And eventually we're going to pass the legislation that they're trying to avoid passing. Yeah, it passed. Let's listen to cut 29 right now.
The Texas law, it does make it easier than ever before for anybody to go cast a ballot. It does also, however, make sure that it is harder for people to cheat at the ballot box in Texas.
It's now a fait accompli, so to speak, Buck Sexton. There's no ability to stop this from becoming law. And it's amazing how this story has sort of disappeared. Now, partly that might be because now everybody suddenly pivoted to abortion, the abortion law out of Texas. But the voting rights bill is effectively done. Democrats accomplish nothing.
Governor Abbott also has got a challenge. He's got a couple challenges right now from the right for his governor's chair, including Alan West, among others. So he knows he's got to step it up a little bit as governor. So
Matthew McConaughey.
If he wants the people, that's on the Democrat side. But if he wants
it's kind of crazy.
But here's some of the things that it does. Bans 24-hour and drive-through voting. New vote-by-mail ID mandates. Bans officials from mailing unsolicited mail-in ballot applications. Empowers poll watchers. By the way, this is the CNN version of it. Monthly voter roll checks. New requirements for assisting voters. All this sounds great. I mean, it's funny. I'm reading this. The ACLU is already, this is the most tyrannical thing in the history of tyranny. We're going to sue. I mean, you have all these libs who are, this is Jim Crow 2.0. This is voter suppression. Clay, it expands voting access from where it was before in the state of Texas. It has much more expansive voting access than New York State or Delaware, some of these very deep blue states. But they're just going to lie about it to people and say that it's a voter suppression bill.
You know what I think is interesting, Buck, is I think the Democrats have so wildly overplayed their hand here. And I think the wild overplay was when Joe Biden got up and said, hey, this is like the Civil War. This is the most dangerous moment in our country's history. And even when they pulled the Major League Baseball game out of Georgia, remember when all that debate was going on? And then you started looking. I mean, all these states that are supposedly suppressing the vote are actually have way more liberal voting policies than Joe Biden's home state of Delaware.
In the state of Texas, for example, voter ID, including for mail-in ballots, has a support in the range of 80%.
Of all races.
All Texans across the board. About 80% say, voter ID. So, if you're like a hardcore leftist or you don't understand what the question is, maybe you oppose voter ID. Short of that, any Texan would want voter ID provisions. But the media just ignores. You always talk about the data, Clay. Ignore the actual data and run with the narrative. I mean, to what you're saying about the overreach, for a reasonable person, of course, what you're saying is true. But I feel like Democrats, they fundraise off this. They play to the lunatic MSNBC watching base. I don't know if they pay a price for this. Otherwise, why would they keep doing it? Why keep lying about it if it hurts them?
I think what they're doing is setting up when they lose in 2022.
Oh, yeah.
They're going to argue in 2024, we've got to fight back against racism and Jim Crow 2.0 because the entire Democratic campaign basically boils down to, as you know, Buck Sexton, everything is racist. That's their entire campaign. You know, this is an incredibly important week to remember those who have fought for our freedoms. An important week to remember those who raced to the Twin Towers in Manhattan and the Pentagon when the nation was attacked. An important week to remember the selfless people on United Flight 93. Tunnel to Towers Foundation doing their part to honor heroes. 200 mortgage-free homes for Gold Star and fallen first responder families with young kids, and for veterans and first responders with serious life-altering injuries. The homes bring hope and improve lives. Help Tunnel to Towers support even more heroes and families in need by donating $11 a month at t2t.org. Your generosity also helps commemorate 9/11. Remarkable acts of remembrance like the foundation's Never Forget Walk, a more than 500-mile journey through 6 states in 42 days, ending at Ground Zero this Saturday. Symbolic towers of light at 2 national memorials and ceremonies to read aloud the names of people killed by 9/11 illness. Get your donations in now. $11 a month at Tunnel to Towers at t2t.org.
My military estimate is that the conditions are likely to develop of a civil war, and that will then in turn lead to conditions that could in fact lead to a reconstitution of Al-Qaeda or a growth of ISIS or other myriad of terrorist groups. You could see a resurgence of terrorism coming out of that general region within 12, 24, 36 months.
12 months, 36 months, 5 years, 10 years, who knows? That was the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Milley. And welcome back to Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show. This is Buck. That was General Milley. He still has his job, which makes it very hard for anyone to think or believe that there is accountability for a clear screw up with the withdrawal. I mean, that's putting it mildly, but, you know, because of the FCC, there's only certain words I can use here. It's very obvious that there were senior level decisions made on the military side that should require resignations. It didn't really happen. In fact, in response to what General Milley just said there on Fox, former acting DNI Rick Grinnell, great guy. I know Rick, smart guy. Here's what he said about Milley's, we could see a resurgence of terrorism.
Look, I know General Milley, and I've been highly disappointed that he's being very political. That is an answer to cover yourself for later, now that those warnings are happening. I've also heard him say that General Miller, who is in charge of Bagram, gave advice to shut down Bagram. Now, I can tell you that that's not true. I know that very firsthand information. I know that General Miller made those stark warnings to Jake Sullivan and said, do not close Bagram. And Bagram was closed. Our troops were removed. We left 10% of the Americans behind. Look, the Joe Biden doctrine, the Biden doctrine for the rest of history will be 90% is good enough. And I think that that's shameful. And the American people should not feel safer when they have a president of the United States willing to take 10% of us and leave us.
You know, Clay, he's obviously talking about his version there, the former DNI Rick Grinnell, saying what he views the Biden doctrine as. There was a piece in New York Times news analysis, not even editorial, over the weekend on the Biden doctrine. And it's amazing to watch them try to clean up on aisle five here of, oh, it's Biden is trying to balance strategic priorities with the blood. The Biden doctrine is you're screwing up. Stop screwing up. I mean, there's actually no framework here. There's no way to look at this other than to say this guy Biden has been wrong for a long time on a lot of things when it comes to foreign policy. And here he's right. That's the Biden doctrine.
I just keep looking at Joe Biden every time he speaks, Buck, whether it's on Afghanistan, which is a disaster, whether it's on the border, whether it's on the murder rate, whether it's on his new $3.5 trillion budget bill, which I know we haven't really talked about a great deal. I think we'll probably touch on some this week in more substance. But obviously that's struggling because you've had Joe Manchin of West Virginia and Kyrsten Sinema of Arizona come out and say, even as Democrats, they're not going to be willing to support it. We've been asking how COVID ends, Buck. I'm genuinely afraid of how this Biden administration ends. Because every single week and every single month, it seems to me that Joe Biden is further in the grips of deteriorating mental condition.
I think they're past this already, Clay. I think that they believe that this is
the Afghanistan,
the Afghanistan thing. Yeah, they're no big deal. The Americans, some will get out, some won't. Yeah, there's some delays, but they got the media in their back pocket. I mean, do you think they're still? Yeah, they're worried about his poll numbers, no question. And I think you're talking about his mental faculties, which is a whole other thing. But on Afghanistan, I think they're already rolling out the narrative of Joe Biden got it done. Sure, it was messy, but it was always going to be messy. And they're rewriting the history of the last 30 days in process right now.
Yeah, I think that's their hope. I think their hope is just that Americans have the memories of goldfish and that whatever occurs next is going to make people forget. The problem that I think the Biden administration has here is when every story ends with you being incompetent and a failure, there's a pretty good theme that's going on. So to me, Afghanistan sticks in the mind of the American public because it further confirms the failure of the Biden administration. And what they need, Buck, is something that is significant of a story enough that takes away the attention from all the things that they're failing on. I don't know what that is, and I'm sure they're sitting down right now as they enter into the fall trying to scramble. Because think about it, Buck. Just, I mean, if you were trying to make an argument, pretend that you are the advocate for Joe Biden. COVID, you've totally failed on. I think we need to keep hammering this. There are twice as many people in the hospital right now with COVID as were in the hospital last Labor Day. Okay? He's failed on COVID. He's failed on the border. He's failed on crime all over this country. He has failed on Afghanistan. He's failed on everything that he has touched. I think they're going to try to argue infrastructure, and I think they're going to try to argue the budget. I'm not sure either of those get through. And then we're going to be into 2022. So to me, this is a White House without ideas and without the functional ability to advocate an effective way on behalf of the American public. I think it's going to keep getting worse.
Your report card, though, is all rooted in reality. and in results and what's actually happened. You know how the Democrats do, how they get Joe Biden elected. I mean, there were a lot of things that went into it, changing the laws in states, breaking the Constitution in certain states. COVID was obviously a huge part of it. But they told us this lie that, one, Joe Biden was a guy who would, you know, bring together the country and he wouldn't be just some pawn of the left. But also beyond that, that they never thought that he was competent, Clay. The people that really pay attention to politics and know Joe Biden understood that he was deteriorating, understood that it was obvious that it was reckless to put this guy in the commander in chief role. But it was, in their minds, fully the lies they told are still fully justified in their minds because it's not Trump for four more years. And we haven't even talked about. So yeah, you're right. I mean, I obviously agree. We talk about the failures all over the place. But you know, in the next year, the narrative is going to shift to racism, the insurrection, the war on women, all these distractions and the media apparatus. You know, only a small percentage of the country is going to be the difference in the midterms. Really, when you look at it, the media apparatus is still 90-95% in the tank for the Democrats. So we have a lot to overcome, even with your report card of reality that reflects as poorly as it does on the actual Biden administration policies.
I think the challenge for them is, even with all that in the tank, when you control the entire government, it's hard to argue that somebody else is responsible for your failures. Now, here's what I think they'll do in response to that. You own the House, you own the Senate, you own the presidency.
I mean, they like kind of own the Senate, right? Like a tiny bit.
They're going to try to shift the attention to the Supreme Court. That's what I think their pivot is going to be. I think if you look forward, they're going to argue that the Supreme Court is blocking the full fruition of the Biden White House and the House for Nancy Pelosi and everything else. And they're going to make the Supreme Court the foil in 2022 and probably in 2024 as well.
There's also that there's the Biden Court Packing Commission. They call it something. They call it the, you know, judicial fairness investigate, whatever. It's the Biden Court Packing Commission. And that's, look, that's, you're right. That's going to be a part of the narrative, especially with this whole war on women abortion thing. That's, you know, the state of Texas has this really interesting law in the way that they've instituted it. I think you're going to see other states go along with this too. One thing that I don't think has gotten enough attention with all that, Clay, as well. And we can come back into this, although we never have enough time. Clay and I,
we could do a 6-hour show.
Literally, we could do a 6-hour show every day. Don't worry, we're not going to, but we could do a 6-hour show every day. But it is, I think it is a statement almost of fact. I mean, you could say it's an assessment, but I think it's an assessment for which it's very hard to find a strong counterargument that as we see this playing out right now in Texas and heading to the Supreme Court over the abortion issue, Donald Trump's election win in 2016 and Donald Trump as a president was the most pro-life, most consequential pro-life president since Roe v. Wade was adopted. Donald Trump will have done more for the cause of life as president based on just the Supreme Court picks that he's made than anyone who came before him. That's pretty remarkable, especially when I'm sure you see it out of Trump world. They're saying he smells weakness with Biden. It's looking more and more like he may do it. But
I would be stunned at this point if he doesn't run. And he almost, was it 2 weeks ago that we had him on? Was it last? Everything runs together. I can't even remember.
We're going to get him to do it. We're going to get him to do it during
the
Mar-a-Lago show.
He almost announced on our show, we're going to go to Mar-a-Lago and give him 3 hours to hang out with us at some point in the near future. In the meantime, if we've learned anything since 2020, nothing quite as important as a powerful immune system. Over 20 years ago, Dr. Dennis Plack of Texas, he invented Texas Superfood. It is the original superfood. We met Dr. Plack years ago when we got to begin to take Texas Superfood, and we learned about the 55 vine-ripened fruits and vegetables, plus probiotic and digestive enzymes. You can build your body's defense from the inside out. We learned from Dr. Plack your immune system's job, detect, deflect, and destroy bacteria you come in contact with. Texas Superfood boosts your immune system better than anything on the market. Your grandmother told you to eat fruits and veggies, but with busy schedules and fast food, guess what? A lot of people don't do it. That's why Texas Superfood is the safety net for the American diet. For over 20 years, they've been helping thousands and thousands of people get and maintain their best health. How do you get hooked up with them, Buck?
Look, if you can't, won't, or don't eat all those fruits and veggies, which we all know have essential stuff in them for your overall health and well-being, Texas Superfood was made for you. Start boosting your immune system for under $2 a day. Go to TexasSuperfood.com/Buck or call 855-TEXAS-55. That's TexasSuperfood.com/Buck or call 855-TEXAS-55.
Welcome back in, Clay Travis, Buck Sexton Show. Appreciate all of you hanging out with us on this Tuesday. Good to be back with my man, Buck. I was out Friday. Buck was out Monday. We're back together now after a nice Labor Day break. And I was just playing during the commercial break for you, Buck. A lot of the crowd's college football. We heard earlier Dr. Fauci saying that he didn't like the fact that all these masked millions of people were willing to go to college football games in stadiums that were packed all over the country. But you are hearing, and I heard it in person, so many college kids out there with anti-Joe Biden chants that are breaking out inside of stadiums. Now, I've never seen anything like it.
Are they yelling Fauci, Joe Biden? Because it's something like
there
that.
There's an F word in front of Joe Biden. And I mean, I've been going to college football games my entire life, and I have never heard a group of college kids chanting anti-American president chants like this. And look, when Joe Biden's got a 43% approval rating from NPR polls, Buck, when the New York Times is writing articles on their editorial page, why is Joe Biden so unpopular? We were just talking in the last segment. If I always like to think about politics from the perspective of, okay, let's try to figure out what both sides can do to maximize their perspective. As we come into the fall, I think it's fair to say that Joe Biden has had one of the most disastrous opening years in modern American history as the president. I think that's fair to say whether you're a Democrat or a Republican in terms of approval rating, in terms of actual substantive accomplishments, in terms of being able to point to anything that is impressive that he's accomplished. Okay. So what do they do now?
But what's fascinating is that if they had a vice president that they really believed in,
yes,
I think you would see, I think it would be much more likely that there would be right now a groundswell among Democrats for, not that Joe Biden's not going to resign, he's not going to step down. That's never going to happen, okay? That's actually not going to happen. But there would be a groundswell for, and he said this himself, people forget this now, one term only. Pass the torch to the VP, and you would start to hear that realistically after the midterms. You still could see something like that. There may still be some Democrats who say that. We're a year out. We'll have to see. But in the meantime, what's very clear is that even Democrats recognize Kamala is not going to get it done. Kamala, running, they can't hand the presidency to Kamala Harris. She'd have to run. You know, Joe Biden would step down. She'd run as the incumbent. Well, it depends on how they did it. But anyway, the point being, she would have to actually become the head of the Democrat Party. And Clay, I think that even Democrats recognize that's not going to work. So then maybe you get to, they run Joe Biden. You always said the weekend at Bernie's presidency.
Yeah, weekend at Bernie's part two.
They get Joe Biden to run. Maybe he wins. And then he steps down in the beginning of term two. As dastardly as that scheme may seem, what, you put it beyond Democrats? They're about to lie about COVID stuff in a year and how it's too dangerous to be in line to vote so they can try to win more elections in the midterms.
I think here's what I wish. I wish the presidential election was next year, because I think if Trump ran, he would absolutely obliterate whoever is running whoever's going to be running for the Democrats if the election were in 2022. There are so many things that can happen between now and 2024 that it's hard to forecast
where we'll be,
who's going to run. Like, I mean, would you have foreseen if we were sitting here in, 2013 and one of us had come on the air and said, hey, I think 2016, it's going to be between Hillary Clinton and I think Donald Trump's going to run and I think he's going to beat Hillary Clinton. That would have been a pretty crazy prediction.
Right? I remember in 2013. I was in conservative media at the time, Clay, and I was over at CNN and there were all these different, I was the on, an on-air conservative when they still allow, they don't even allow that anymore,
no,
right? But they used
not.
To have,
yeah.
They'd have like, they'd bring you on, they'd say, ahem, right-wing lunatic Buck Sexton wants to weigh in on this
and
one.
And just let everybody
and then the anchor,
and
everybody just attack you and the whole thing. But even at that stage, let's never forget, they put Trump on air at CNN in 2015, going into the 2016 election. They put him on air because they thought it was funny. They
yes.
thought it was amusing.
It's good
Look
ratings.
At how dumb these Republicans are. They're going with this guy. And, of course, we got the last laugh, which is why, Clay, also, they never would forgive Trump because the thing that he did, it was even more than about the Supreme Court picks and how there's now a real threat to Roe, thank God, and all these real policy changes that came from Trump. The unforgivable sin of Donald Trump, as far as the media was concerned, was that he was a threat to the vanity of the journo elites. That was too far, too much. Calling them fake news, all of it.
25%, we should mention, the study that came out, 25% of Biden voters now regret their vote. And so I don't think there's any way they can Weekend at Bernie style to try to drag him across the finish line. I'm not even sure what they pivot to. I think abortion and the Supreme Court will be one of the things they try to distract people with. I mean, I think that's where they feel maybe they can energize some supporters who aren't energized in any way by Joe Biden. I'm curious to see what happens with the budget, because I think that's a big part of this, too.
If Roe is struck down, though, as we've talked about here, Clay, and this will be a big issue from now until June, it just goes back to the states. And then what
that's
I think
right.
will happen is people will see, OK, well, state legislatures will pass laws about this, and some will have, you know, a 6-week or a 10-week or whatever restriction. Others will be abortion at any time for any reason. And when people see that it's not actually this Handmaid's Tale dystopia
yes.
that
it's a great point.
It may not even be the issue they think it is. So, you know, basically everything is racist, I think, is their most like. Oh, and class warfare, socialism stuff. There you go.
And we'll see what happens with the budget. It's going to be huge, I think, to see whether Biden can get that pushed through. And I'm not sure that he can.
Thanks for being here with us, Clay. And I'm excited to be back with you. Please check out the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show podcast. If you missed any part of today, back tomorrow. Talk to you then.
You're listening to Clay Travis and Buck Sexton on the EIB Network.